Yeah. Hey, this is Donald Lansky talking about mapping place names in Western Australia.
Oh, good morning. First up, I suppose I'd just like to thank the conveners and organisers of the conference and colloquium and our host, the Hawaiian people. Before I start, I probably should make two small confessions. One is that I'm not really a big Microsoft person, so better erase that from the tape recording. So my proficiency with PowerPoint's not the greatest, so it's a fairly minimalist presentation, and there are exactly three photos in the presentation. Second thing is that my background professionally and academically is probably more multidisciplinary, and most of my work is in archaeology rather than linguistics. And archaeology in Western Australia tends to be collaborative in nature, although after a paper yesterday about the word collaboration, I was a bit uncertain about whether to use that word. But basically what that means is that it's quite difficult to do archaeology in Western Australia without the involvement of traditional owners. So when you're doing surveys, you have archaeologists, and traditional owners. And the team of traditional owners, typically men, group of up to six or eight men, older men, younger men. And part of a reason for that is to allow the older men to teach the younger men about the country and the landscape, as well as to learn about archaeology. And so from an archaeologist's point of view and a linguist's point of view, it means that archaeological surveys become discussions about history, genealogy, anthropology, linguistics, and sometimes other stuff, you know, the forbidden three, sex, politics, and religion. Yeah. So this paper will present some preliminary results of using GIS software to map place names in Western Australia, and time permitting, discuss some of the difficulties I've had in achieving this goal. Now, why I'm doing this is it's something I've been interested in doing for a number of years, and I suffer from that gunner syndrome. I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And, so finally, when this colloquium came along, I thought, well, I'm not gonna do this, I am going to do it. So it's been something I've been interested in for several years. The other two reasons which are up there is that spatial data tends to be difficult to manipulate, difficult to acquire. A lot of it's commercially confidential, a lot of it's used in native title claims, so the legal documents, and so you just can't access it. And so, you know, after years of moaning about no baseline data, I thought, well, I've got to do it myself. Now, I'll start with a general map of the world, where we are, where Western Australia is, just in case no one knows. Now, Western Australia, which is roughly the western third of the Australian continent, is a very big place. So, anyone from Texas here? No. So, in comparison to where we have been there, it's about 2.6 million square kilometres. And Texas is about 690,000 square kilometres. But size isn't everything, so I've been told. West Australia has a population of about 2 million people, about 1.2 million living in the capital city of Perth, which I apologise, haven't put up there. So it's a very sparsely occupied continent, and largely because two-thirds of it is arid or semi-arid. About 4% of the population is indigenous, although in some areas it can be up to 15, 20, 25%. And I can't give you any precise statistics because the Australian Bureau of Statistics charges you for that information. So, in Western Australia, there are about 50,000 officially gazetted place names, and most of these derive from four sources. They're what I am terming indigenously derived names, because, and I'm using that term rather than indigenous place names, because the official place name is going to be an anglicised version of an Aboriginal name that may or may not be the same place that that's on the spot. So, in some instances, an example, up in the Pilbara, there's a place called Jimblebar, which is a mine, an iron ore mine, and the Nyabali name for that is Jimpulpa, and the mine itself is probably about 10 kilometres from the actual location of Jimpulpa. And when I was on my very first job as archaeologist, the elders talked about a very important ceremonial place at Jimpulpa, and the government agency responsible for looking after Aboriginal sites put it next to the mine, as opposed to where it should be, which is 10 kilometres away. But what happens with the a lot of the anglicised Indigenous names is that a lot of the Surveyor Generals really pushed for Indigenous names. So the very first Surveyor General in Western Australia was very, very specifically asked all his surveyors to ask their guides, what's the name of this place? So you'd actually have a gazette of names. Then we have the Dutch. The Dutch explorers.
We'll go back up.
The Dutch were very interested in their spice trade there, and they used to travel around the Cape of Good Hope, go up and around, take about 12 months to do that. Then someone discovered there's a thing called Roaring Forties, which come across, and they come across and then turn up. Unfortunately, if you don't turn up in time, there's a great big cliff called the Zoopdorp Cliff. It's about 100 miles long, 300 feet high, and if you crash into that, you've got nowhere to go. And it's called the Zoopdorp Cliffs because there's a ship called the Zoopdorp that ran aground, well, broke up, and survivors supposedly made it there. Now, the Dutch were very commercially orientated, so they weren't particularly interested in Australia. It didn't have any obvious resources, and they tended to be quite disparaging about... This is a map of tribal socio-dialectical boundaries in Western Australia. It's not a very good map, and I was very reticent to bring it up, but it's borrowed from the Department of Indigenous Affairs site. It's non-manipulable, and as it says up there, it's one of a few national depictions of maps. So the Dutch were actually quite disparaging, and one of the explorers, Willem de Vlamin, landed on an island off the coast of Perth and discovered it was occupied by very large rats. They're actually quokkas, and so he named the place Rotnest, which in Dutch is Rat's Nest. Then, in the late 1700s, early 1800s, we had British and French explorers, and they tended to play a few games with each other in terms of tracking each other around the coast, and but they named a lot of places along the coastline. So the French explorers would name places, and then the English explorers would come around and name other places, and places would be renamed. And then in December 1826, a British military garrison was established at King George Sound in the south coast of Western Australia, and that was a political thing to stop the French. Now, King George's Sound was actually called King George III Sound, and it became King George's Sound. Then it was called Frederickstown, and then in the First World War, when the British royal family decided that being German wasn't really a good thing, got changed its name to Albany. And then 2 years later, the Swan River Colony was settled, and British colonisation happened, and by about 1900, the rest of the state had been explored or at least named. Now, the English and indigenously derived names comprised the bulk of the officially gazetted place names. And probably just as an aside, you do get some very odd or unusual names that appear in the gazetteer. So there's a station homestead called Xanthippa, which is the wife of Socrates. Apparently was quite, had a very sharp tongue, so why someone chose to name their homestead after her. There's also a strange place in the southwest called Sekina. Now, why anyone's named it that, following Kabbalah perhaps. But, so, going back to there, it was estimated at the time of British colonisation there were about 180 socio-dialectical groups in Western Australia, and unfortunately not all those languages are still spoken today, and many of them are in a fairly perilous state. But what has happened today is a lot of groups will tend to identify collectively, so the southwest corner here, the people there will collectively call themselves Noongar. In the Midwest region here, the Yamaji, Pilbara region, Marlborough, and the same, the Kimberleys, but I don't actually know the name of what the... Okay, in this study, my data comes from the Commonwealth Government Official Gazetteer, which is a database, which I had to pay for. It's a searchable database in Microsoft Access format, contains, you can search for specific place names, you can do wildcard searches, you can restrict the area and the type of feature you're looking for. And it struck me as a very good starting point for doing baseline research. And The other software that I've been using, originally started off with ArcMap when I was working for a large mining company and they paid for the license for, and then I've since backgraded into MapInfo 6.5. I'm going to try out Manifold next. Now the problem with large amounts of data is how you can manipulate it and reduce it into manageable portions. And In West Australia, a lot of people who visit will identify all the places in a particular area and in a particular suffix. So in the southwest, there's Manjimup, Kondinup, Nanup, and the up often gets glossed as well. It means place of, or it means water, place of water. So when you look at a map, you can look at these suffixes, and so that's how I've derived what I've been searching for. The search process, which I've done a wildcard search for star up, and the problem is, some of you might have to see, is you've got Amalup, Amalup, Amarup, and then you've got this Ajax group, Abbott's group. Mm-hmm. It gets everything with up. So you get 2,155 hits, and then you have to find some way of sorting that data down to get what you want. So you can either manually sort it, or if you're clever and can use SQL programming, you can probably pull it out that way. So the ups become, or places which I'm interested in, come about 1,700 hits as opposed to 2,100. And then the good thing is you can actually export this into Excel, and then you can play around with it. I will gloss over that one. So after I've done a search of up and plotted it all on the map, that's what you get. Now, some of these, like Burrup up there, which a photo in the very first photo you saw was of the Burrup, that's actually named after person, so it's not a in there. But you can see there's quite a distinct clustering concentration. And then it's a matter of actually looking at anomalies and going, well, doing some research on that, but turn up might be just simply turn up. And I thought there was supposed to be a jump up as well, which might be jump up as opposed to a specific name. But in this one, there's a pretty clear distribution of up names in the southwest. Another suffix I used was Awa, Malawa, Moawa, which I thought was going to be in the Midwest, and there's certain, yeah, a little bit of a cluster in there, but it's a lot more random, a lot harder to deal with. And this is the one suffix ending in in, I-N. Now, unfortunately, I hadn't been able to distinguish between endings in I-N-E, which might be Nullagine as opposed to Cundadin. Obviously very different sounding names, but I had about 11,000 hits with this particular suffix, and the only way I could work through it was actually to go back to the next preceding consonant before the suffix and try and manipulate the data that way. But you can see there's probably a bit of a cluster down in that area. So where would I go from here is one thing that I have been doing is just going back to the next consonant to try and get the data into even more manageable forms to deal with. I'd like to start doing some semantic analysis of place names. And I also now have a better source of data to start approaching traditional owner groups to discuss further research with the traditional owners. In conclusion, which I suspect is stating the obvious, when you're going to deal with large data sets, you've really got to ask yourself, what are you actually trying to do? What's the target area? What's the source data? And the third one there is garbage in, garbage out. You've got to think about your database and how you're going to set up your database and how you're going to manipulate the database. And also, my experience has been, if you try and automate too much of it, you're going to lose data. So even though I had 11,000 things to work through to sort out, I thought that was probably going to be time consuming, but you get a better understanding of the data set you're dealing with, so you start to pick out trends, you can start to see anomalies you can then address those things as you proceed. Now I'm going to go back into my cave now.